The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, as every week, we are working hard to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. And this week is question and answer week. Question and answer week. What does that mean? It means no guest. It's just me and Bob here in the studio, looking at each other, looking at equipment, microphones, not knowing what to talk about, unless you call, text, or email in questions. And it can be about anything related to real estate investing, whatever's been on your mind, the market, finding deals, finance, creative finance. I can even attempt to tackle some rehab questions, getting started, whatever. Phone number to call with your questions is 877-772-9658. If you would prefer to communicate electronically, we have a text line at 513-201-8249. 513-201-8249. Or, of course, there's always the email route at vinaradio@gmail.com. That's V like in Victor, E-N-A, radio@gmail.com. As always, it's really good if you are texting or emailing to let us know what your name is and where you are writing from, so that Bob doesn't have to sit on his cell phone and look up area codes.
Thank you.
Trying to see where you might be writing from. And, you know, that's could very easy to be wrong anymore. Like, half the people I know in Cincinnati do not have Cincinnati area codes because they brought their cell phones from someplace else. So while we are waiting for some questions to come in at 877-772-9658 or vinaradio@gmail.com. A couple of events that are coming up this week, even though this is not the week of the Cincinnati RIA online chapter meeting. That's next week, and that's going to be a really good one with Hannah Flegel, who was our guest last week, and she's going to talk about rent-to-own deals and have, you know, 75 whole minutes all to herself to explain how she does it and finds people and finds properties and all the stuff you want to know. So that would be at CincinnatiRIA.com. This weekend is when everything is happening. Saturday, which is Valentine's Day, you have the opportunity to get your sweetie exactly what they want for Valentine's Day, which is good, clean books that you can just turn over to the CPA and they can do your taxes and they can do them cheap and not charge you extra money because your books are a mess and not have to be constantly calling you and saying, wait, what is this deduction? It's an all-day online how to set up and run QuickBooks class for real estate investors, meaning literally you're going to like get your QuickBooks online thing open, and Jerry Fink, who is a real estate investor and he calls himself a recovering CPA, he's going to show you how to set up the chart of accounts for a real estate business, how to run reports, how to do things like see if the budget that you had set for your rehab deal actually came out the way you thought it was, find out how much you're actually making from your deals, all the stuff. And so very hands-on. It's also going to be recorded because you're probably going to need to go back later and go, wait a minute, what did he say about how to account for stuff on a closing statement? So You can get all the information about that, including apparently there's a way to get, if you don't already have QuickBooks Online, there's a way to get like a free trial, like a free 15-day trial to work on Saturday, cincinnatirea.com. Sunday. Yes, I said Sunday. That's right. We have so many classes and events that we are down to doing things on Sunday, and this is going to amuse you. We have two meetings on Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. OREA is presenting the What You Need to Know About the Ohio Wholesaling Law meeting. It is online. It is for folks who wholesale or want to wholesale in Ohio, but it's also for people who buy wholesale deals in Ohio. We've spent the last couple of weeks getting information, meeting with the Department of Commerce about enforcement, all of that sort of thing, so that we could explain all the stuff that you're not being told about what you need to do and what the outcomes could be if you don't do it. And one of the surprising things that we found out was that you can still get in trouble in Ohio for wholesaling without a license under certain circumstances. And also, if you have a license and you're doing some things the Department of Commerce doesn't like, you can get in trouble with them even if you made the disclosures. And another thing we found out is that if you buy wholesale deals in Ohio, you better make daggone sure that the wholesaler had that disclosure signed by the seller before you get into the deal, or things could go badly wrong. Anyway, CincinnatiRea.com will sign you up for that. Right after that, at 7:30, because I didn't have enough days of the week when I was working, is our first episode of the Money and Markets 101 Playbook. That is a 7-week economics class. It's like, how do the things outside of what you're doing in your business affect what you should be doing in your business? Things like inflation and monetary policy and taxes and legislation and seller psychology and buyer psychology and credit and all those sort of things. How do those things inform what you should be doing? Because we've just seen too many people over the last year who had been crushing it in the real estate business suddenly getting crushed by the real estate business because they didn't know what to do when the market changed. That class is for members only, so you're going to need to join if you're not a member, but for members, it's like $27 for all 7 weeks. Again, CincinnatiRea.com. Okay, I think I've tap danced long enough that there are some questions in the inbox. Oh, do we have a text question too?
Well, there is a text question, but first, there was a person who called the text line, and you can't call the text line. The text line is 513-201-8249, but you need to call the number 877-772-9658. So if you call the text line, please call the 877 number.
Yes. So phone number is 877-772-9658. So read me a texted question.
Read you a texted question. The first one that came in, Todd from Loveland. Has the current market been puffed to the point of making it harder to start renting to own?
Harder to start renting to own. So in other words, I think the question, Todd, is if I am like just getting started in the real estate business and wanting to sell rent to own, or maybe I am a potential home buyer who can't buy a house right now and I want to buy starting out with a rent to own, has it become more difficult because of the current market? So generally rent to owns get more popular when the market starts to stumble because there are more people who want to like try before they buy a house, as it were, or who want to, they've got more work to do before they have enough down payment or good enough credit to buy the home. So it's generally in markets like this that I start getting calls from people because I have a house for sale that say, hey, would you do a rent to own? Now, the word puffed made me think that you were asking about house prices. And house prices had gotten out of control. Like, the houses are the least affordable they have been in the history of tracking affordability of houses. Now, here in Loveland, it's not as bad in Cincinnati as it has gotten in some other places, but it's, you know, you've seen what's happened. The thing is, all of that run-up in house prices was caused by two things, one more than the other. And this is what we're going to talk about in that market, Money and Markets playbook starting on Sunday. It wasn't so much that prices of houses went up, it was that the value of dollars went down. When you throw $1 trillion into the money supply, each dollar becomes worth less, and that is particularly a problem when you throw $1 trillion into the money supply and there's nothing to buy. If you recall when that happened, international shipping was destroyed, manufacturing, like it all happened at the same time. Restaurants weren't open, you know, like you had all this extra money and there was nothing to buy with the money. And that was particularly true with houses. We have had a shortage of houses in this country for, 15 years now. Everybody's known it. Everybody's talked about it. Nobody's done anything about it. So you send a whole bunch of people out into the world with money that they have received from the government and also 2.5% interest rates, and shocking that house prices would double in 3 or 4 years. They never have managed to repeal the law of supply and demand, no matter how hard they try. So that is what is causing, it's that run-up in prices plus the completely expected run-up in interest rates afterwards that have caused the market now to be kind of wah-wah. You know, it's gone from you put your house on the market, and if it's priced right, it's gone in 2 days at above asking price to property staying on the market 60, 70, 80, if you aren't willing to be realistic about the price, 100, 200 days. So, you know, what has that got to do with lease optioning? Well, see, the thing about a lease option is it's not an obligation, it's an option. So folks can, you know, if they really like the house and they think they want to buy it sometime at some point, but they are not sure what the value is going to be, like they're not sure if prices are going to go down, stay the same, go up, they can live in the property and rent for however long the option is for, and then they cannot buy it. What you lose by not buying it is the rent, which you would have paid in any rental, and any option fee that you put up to reward the owner for, you know, keeping their house off the market and agreeing to only sell it to you for 2 or 3 years. So, I think overall probably lease options are a little warmer now than they were 2 years ago, but it's always about, are you doing them right? Are you pricing them right? Are you finding the right people to put in them? So if you're looking to do that as part of a investment strategy for yourself, you might want to attend that Cincinnati REIA meeting next Thursday, because that's a question you could ask Hannah. She's been doing this for a long time. It's question and answer week on Real Life Real Estate Investing. We are taking calls at 877-772-9658. Also emails at vinaradio@gmail.com. Or, boy, this text line's been incredibly popular. You can text us at 513-201-8249. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Question and Answer Week on Real Life Real Estate Investing. It's the day when, you know, whatever questions you have, we are happy to answer them. Taking them at 877-772-9658. That's the phone number where you would call and talk to me. The text line is 513-201-8249. And the email is vinaradio@gmail.com. Let me go to a couple of questions that have shown up in the inbox since we started. Jim says, is there a link for a replay of the talk on short sales on 89.3? I'm in Kansas City and just now downloaded the listening app. Thanks so much. Oh, yeah, I always forget to tell people. WMKV has an app that you can put on your phone so that you don't have to be around a computer in order to listen to it if you're out of town. That's how I listen to the show when I'm out of town and other people are hosting it. Just look for WMKV in the App Store. The answer to your question, Jim, is realliferealestate.com. Realliferealestate.com. There are hundreds of shows there, and you can always search them by, I mean, that one was just a few weeks ago, so you can always search them by how do I do short sales or the name of the guest, which was David Randolph. Okay, question from Pam. For investors in Florida where foreclosures can take months and months, what can or should we do to protect ourselves against the possibility of a buyer default? So I assume that this question is about making a loan? Because, like, you said a buyer default. Oh, I bet it's about, like, selling houses repair for equity. That's what we were talking about last week. So the best protection against a buyer default is what buyer did you put in that property, right? Screen people, find out that they do in fact make the money they say they make, make sure that they pay their other bills, right? You want to look for past evictions, you want to look at their credit report, you got to do all this stuff for Dodd-Frank anyway, so go ahead and do it. And then the other thing that makes me feel better, and that will, like, I will take somebody with a little more iffy credit, is if they put more money up front. It takes months and months and months to do a foreclosure here in Ohio too, Pam. And I am way more hesitant to take on somebody with a slightly, I want to give them a chance, but they look kind of iffy about whether they're going to be able to pay. If they put $10,000 down, then if they put $1,000 down, because $10,000 will pay for that foreclosure and probably the taxes while I'm foreclosing and all the stuff. Now, I will say, Pam, that I've had long experience selling properties to homeowners on land contracts, and there has only been one time in hundreds of deals where I have had to foreclose. Mostly you call up your buyer and you say, hey, look, obviously this isn't working out. You can't make the payment. Why don't we do this? Sign away your land contract rights, right? Release the land contract, and I'll give you till the end of the month to get moved to someplace that you can actually afford. And that works most of the time. The only foreclosure I've ever actually had to do, the buyers disappeared off the face of the earth, and no amount of searching for them that I could do or that my attorney could do or that a private investigator could do was able to locate them. They did a very good job of going away. I'm pretty sure that if I had been able to find them, they would have signed the property over to me because they clearly didn't want it because they moved out. But yeah, if you're picking the right kinds of folks and getting enough money up front, it's, you know, foreclosure is a cost of doing business, and it's not that big a cost because it's not going to happen that often, and hopefully you've got enough money to pay for it. What else we got on the text screen there, Bob?
We've got three of them waiting for you. This one here is from Rachel in SoCal. She writes, how do we find out about wholesaling in California? And can we wholesale in Ohio if we live in California?
Okay, so... There feels like there should be a comment there. How do we find out about wholesaling in California? How do we find out about wholesaling in California? So, Rachel, the first thing I would do is Google whether there's any particular laws about wholesaling in California. To my knowledge, there are not. There are in a lot of states, but California is not one of them, to my knowledge. Can you wholesale in Ohio if you are from California? Yes, you can, assuming that you need to come to this free thing on Sunday night at 6 to find out about the disclosures that you have to make. The question I would ask you, though, is why? Why do you want to wholesale in Ohio? Is it because you think it's a better market? Because my experience is the more expensive a market is, the more money wholesalers make on each deal. Like it's way easier for me to build in a $50,000 profit on a $1 million junker property than it is for me to build a $50,000 profit into a $100,000 junker property, which is about the price range of property that I tend to wholesale here in Ohio. If you're thinking, oh, well, Ohio is probably less competitive, you are wrong. We have two of the largest groups in the United States here in Ohio. And also everybody who's from out of state seems to want to do either Ohio or Michigan. Those seem to be the two. I want to virtually wholesale in Ohio and Michigan. It's way easier to learn about things like construction and repair costs and property values and neighborhoods in your own backyard than it is halfway across the country. It's also easier to build networks of buyers in your own backyard than it is across the country. I know virtual wholesaling is a big thing. A lot of people have been selling that idea for a long time. I know like one or two people who've done it successfully, and they have really good boots on the ground because I just can't tell you how many times I've gone to see a property that, you know, some wholesale, it sounded like a good price. Wholesaler said, yeah, it's worth $200,000, which I was able to check for myself because, you know, I can find comps myself. And then they said, you know, all it needs is a new kitchen and a new bath. Okay, so it's got a, like the furnace is new, the roof is new, the window, oh yeah, all that stuff just needs a new kitchen and a bath. And I go out to see it and it needs $100,000 worth of work. And I call the wholesaler and I was like, what made you think it only needed a new kitchen and a new bath? Well, that's what the seller told me. Oh, so you haven't seen it? Well, no, I live in Oregon. Boy, you just wasted the heck out of my time and everybody else who's going to go see that property. And sometimes they even say, well, the seller sent me pictures. That's how I know. Okay, well, I don't know how the seller managed to send you a picture of a new furnace in a house where the furnace is 50 years old, but okay. Like there's two sides to this, right? There's finding the deals, but there's also selling good deals to investors. And if you're going to sell good deals to investors, you need to know it's a good deal. And the only way you're going to know it's a good deal is if you or somebody that you trust who is skilled is in that property and can give you a realistic view of what it needs and what, you know, what kind of area is it in. People from California call me all the time and they say, oh, I've got a great rehab resale deal for you. And I say, where is it? And they name a neighborhood that's a D neighborhood in Cincinnati. So in other words, it's not a rehab resale deal. There's not going to be a home buyer at the end of that. It's a rental deal. And at the price they're asking, it's not a rental deal. So I always challenge people about why do you want to wholesale any place else other than in your own backyard? But thank you so much for the question. And if you do want to do Cincinnati again, go to CincinnatiRIA.com and sign up for the class on Sunday so that you at least know what you are doing in terms of the law and disclosure. Okay, question from Alan in Arizona. He says, for the Saturday event, which version of QuickBooks is recommended? Is there a Vina discount on QuickBooks? I wish. If Vina had a discount on QuickBooks, Vina would be using the discount on QuickBooks. Go to CincinnatiRIA.com and look, because it specifically says either QuickBooks Online Pro or there's some other version. And there's the link where you can get it, get a free trial. It's either a free trial for 15 days or you can get some percent off for a whole year subscription. So just go check that out at CincinnatiRIA.com. Got another question there.
Yeah, we got another question here. This one is from Alan, but he's from Lebanon, Ohio. Wants to know, how do you run numbers on deals and what are the step-by-step processes to determine risk, rate of return, and whether you go through with the deal?
Wow. See, this is one of those questions that would be easier to answer if we had a whiteboard and a camera. Numbers questions can be a little bit tough on the radio, but I will tell you this from a high level, Alan. There are two big things that I am looking at in terms of what are the numbers. One is the after repaired value and repair cost number. And yes, I'm looking at that even if it is a rental. You know, even if I never plan to sell it, I really don't want to overpay for it in case I do have to sell it, right? If I have to sell it, I've always had the thought, you know, it turned out I needed a head transplant and I had to like sell everything I owned so that I could get my head transplanted. Would I have at least enough equity in all of my houses to just sell it and be even? And that's about 10% equity. I mean, you it costs about 10% of what a house is going to sell for to sell it. So even with a rental, I'm first looking at what is it worth fixed up and what is it going to cost to fix it? Because that's going to be one determinant of the price. But then I'm going to go look at the thing that I think you're talking about, which is what is it going to rent for? Which I find, you know, I look online. I go to the various rental sites. I see what's for rent. I see what's been for rent for 6 months, because if it's still for rent 6 months later, that's too much. They're asking too much for the rent. What are the taxes going to be after I buy it, which could be different than what they are right now because I might be paying more or less than what the current assessment is. What is my insurance going to be, which I can pick up the phone and call my insurance agent and say, hey, what's it going to cost me to insure this house at 123 Easy Street? It's brick. It has a new roof. It's got an old furnace, etc. I always use a 20% factor of 20% of the gross rent factor for vacancy, maintenance, and capital expenditures. And people always challenge me on that. They say, I heard it was 7%. Or I don't need the money for maintenance and capital expenditures. I don't need to save that up because I am going to completely rehab the house. And so it won't need any maintenance or capital expenditures, said no one who ever owned a rental property for more than 5 years. Like you always are going to have maintenance. And the whole idea of capital expenditures is you're saving up so that the house can pay for the roof when it needs the roof, not tomorrow. So I found that 20% is about the correct number for setting aside for reserves. And I take the rent, say times 0.8 to take care of that 20%, minus the taxes, minus the insurance. That gives me my net operating income. And then that operating income is how much I have left over to pay the mortgage payment and pay and take any profit. So take the principal interest payment and any profit. And the thing is, what does that mean about how much I can pay for the house? It depends on the financing, doesn't it? If I'm buying it subject to a 2.5% existing loan, I can probably pay that 90% of value. If I'm having to go get a 7.25% DSCR loan, I may have to pay significantly less so that my mortgage payment comes in under that number that is for my profit and my mortgage payment. So I just got a text that said that question is an entire seminar. That is accurate. That is correct. And actually, you know, since Cincinnati area talks, particularly the rental owners focus group and even the main meetings talk about this all the time. It is a very important question, Alan. I'm glad you asked it. It's a little complicated, again, to do without sitting down with you and writing stuff down, but you're thinking in the right direction. And until you figure out how that then relates to the purchase price or not purchase price, you probably shouldn't buy a rental. I will say that I analyze a lot of properties, especially right now. And when I get down to that bottom line number, I'm like, I can't pay $250 for this property. In order to make it work for me, I would have to pay like $175. And then I offer $175. It doesn't hurt to tell the seller, hey, I like your house. I like it well enough that I would like to buy it. The problem is I have to buy it at $175 for it to work for me and let them say yes or no. That's my best advice for a slow market is make offers. Okay, we need to take another quick break. It is question and answer week. If you have questions, you can send them to vinoradio@gmail.com. Text them to 513-201-8249. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing Question and Answer Week. And it's a busy day on the text line today. Bob just can't stop reading me texts.
Well, yeah, here we go. This one is from Jim in Ohio. It reads, if I'm not a member of Cincinnati RIA, how can I listen to Hannah? This is the first question.
Oh, yes. So that national meeting is actually open to the public. So you just go to CincinnatiRIA.com and click on the calendar event and put in your name and information, and also it will then kick you back a link. And also, why are you not a member of Cincinnati RIA? He's going to say, because I live in Cleveland. Yeah, we got members who live in Florida. You are not too far away.
He also asks, I'd like to know more about the rent-to-own strategy.
Yep, that's what Hannah's going to talk about.
Well, there you go. And let's take a look. And
if Jim is a member of CoRE, it's the same meeting. Like it's possible that he's saying that because he's in Columbus and he's a member of CoRE. CoRE has the same meeting on that third Thursday as Cincinnati RIA does.
Yeah, hold on. Okay, it's an answer back from what you did before. This is Rachel in SoCal again. She has asked, from a conservative risk-averse investor's standpoint, if I own my home free and clear, am a senior who has lived here for nearly 40 years, and I'm nervous about risk but interested in getting into real estate investing, what is the safest, most conservative way to begin?
Wow.
There's another part to it, too, but I'll let you tackle that first.
Well, let me see if the other part is informative.
Relevant. It says, I'm not experienced with investing, and I do not want to move out of my home. While I understand nothing is truly foolproof, what approach would offer the most stability and the lowest risk?
Gosh, the thing that offers you the lowest risk is being as educated as you can be. I don't know how else to say that. Like, everything you do in real estate can be incredibly dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. You could lose money. You could get sued. You could get in trouble with the government. Like, there's any number of things that could go wrong investing in real estate or any other investment, I suspect. And when people say, well, you know, I'm really risk averse, I need to know like what the lowest risk thing is, my answer is always what takes the risk never completely away. Because I mean, we did have 2007. Remember that, Rachel? You were in Southern California in 2007. You remember what happened to house prices, right? Because you got hit worse than anybody. Like, our prices here dropped 30-40%. I think yours dropped 50 in 2007. And, you know, nobody controls that sort of thing. The thing is, knowing how to analyze these things, knowing what the downsides are and being able to mitigate against them, obviously, having as little of your own money as possible into a deal is a way to, you know, belay some of the risks as well. That's probably why you were asking about wholesaling, because you had heard that wholesaling, like, you don't have a whole bunch of money in it. And if a wholesale deal doesn't work out, generally all you're walking away from is the deal. You're not usually walking away from a bunch of earnest money or investment that you have made in the deal. But the wholesaling is a job, and most people don't want to keep doing that job over and over and over again. What they really want is passive income. They want, or as passive as it can be, they want a rental property where they get a check every month no matter what happens. And what are the risks in owning rentals? Well, let's see. You could misanalyze the deal and buy it at the wrong price, and there was just no way from day one that you possibly could have made any money on that rental. So every month you're just feeding it. You're like taking out from, you're taking the tenant's rent and paying the bank, and then you're taking other income also from, like, I don't know, your job or whatever, and paying the bank. If you know how to really analyze the deal, that's likely not to happen to you. What's another risk? Well, you could put somebody in the house who does $13,000 worth of damages to a newly rehabbed house in a year. I know somebody that just happened to. $13,000 is a lot of damages. Nobody should, like, if you have a newly rehabbed house, it should not need a $13,000 rehab at the end of the year. Well, how do you overcome that? You understand how to really screen applicants, because typically leopards don't change their spots. You know, like, if they did it to you, they did it to somebody before you, and you just somehow managed to not find that out. Well, there are ways to really check people out before you hand them the keys to your property. And that information is out there, like, it's available to you to learn. What is another risk of rental properties? Well, this one is more for like shared housing and short-term rentals, which people are really into. The local government could decide you can't do that anymore. They could literally outlaw what it is you are doing. And you would have to either sell the property or go back to it being a long-term rental. And that's all fine if you bought it correctly so that it works as a long-term rental. But if you bought it based on the short-term rental income, you're suddenly, like, you've got a house that's going to rent for half of what your monthly payment is. How do you avoid that? Well, first of all, you understand the laws where you're investing. Secondly, you stay connected where you're investing, because if new laws are coming up, you need to know about those as well, and you need to go to City Hall and talk to people about them. And you learn things like don't buy deals based on the existence of an exotic exit strategy. Buy a deal that would work as a flip or that would work as a long-term rental, and if it happens to make more money as a short-term rental, awesome. But if they take that away from you, like, you see what I'm saying? It's all about, what did I learn? And that still doesn't mean you will never, ever, ever lose any money, but it makes the chances a whole lot less. That's why RIA groups exist. That's why, you know, Cincinnati RIA has been around for 50 years. This is the 50-year anniversary, in fact, of Cincinnati RIA, is because people keep learning that lesson over and over and over again. And thank you for that question. We're going to take another quick break. I think we got plenty of questions to take us through the rest of the show, but we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox's Question and Answer Week. Did we get through all the text questions, Bob, or not?
As of right now, yes. The text line has been answered.
Okay, awesome. I have questions still at vinaradio@gmail.com. This one is from Christy in New Jersey. And Christy says, I've been talking to a lot of sellers lately who are very inflated in price. New Jersey has not come way down yet. Some price reductions, but things are also still selling, and days on market is usually around 30 to 40 days in most towns. When dealing with an inflated seller, we're $100,000 apart in pricing. Do you go ahead and make an offer or preserve the relationship and maybe refer them to an agent who can help put their feet back on the ground in terms of a realistic price point? Okay, so Christy, when you say there are sellers who are inflated in price, do you mean they are really inflated in price, or they're just inflated versus what you can make work as an investor? Because those are two very different things. It sounds like maybe you've got a combination of both, but people who you said prices haven't come down in New Jersey. Some price reductions, but days on market usually around 30, 40 days. It sounds like what you're saying is you've got sellers who they couldn't have sold that house for the price they're asking even in 2022 or 2021 when interest rates were 2.1%. And how do you handle those people as an investor? So I kind of divide them into two categories, Christy. There's the ones who, like, they don't have a problem. They don't need to sell their house. They kind of like to, but they don't need to. And those folks, I'm not going to try and talk to them about an investor price. I'm going to do exactly what you said, and I'm going to refer them to a real estate agent, and then I'm probably not going to talk to them again, because if you don't need to sell your house, you should hold out for whatever dream price you want. You should put it on the market and leave it there for 9 years if that's what it takes to get your $2 million if you don't really need the money and don't really need to sell the house. So yeah, I'm gonna refer them to an agent I like, and that's just as much to kind of get them off the phone and get to the motivated seller as anything else. The other kind of seller is the one who, yeah, they need to sell. Like there's a foreclosure coming, or a tax lien sale coming, or they inherited the house and they really can't afford it, and what they really need to do is get their cash and go move on to something they can afford, or the city's all over them for who knows what, code violations, they illegally sold on a land contract, you know, who knows, but it's not going to get better, right? They really need to just get rid of the property, move on, and so on. Those people, if they're talking motivated, but their price isn't motivated, I do need the market to tell them that what they are hoping for is not in the cards, particularly not on a quick time frame. So what I will typically do with those folks is I will say, listen, I'm hearing you. I'm hearing what you're saying about the price you'd like to get. That's really not going to work for me, because I need to have it at a price where, you know, I can fix it up and sell it and make a profit, or I can rent it and make a profit. And the price you're asking is not that. You know, you're thinking, I'm going to use Cincinnati prices, not New Jersey prices. You're thinking 350. I'm thinking like 250. So obviously that's not going to work for you. So what I would do if I were you is I would put the house on the open market and hope that somebody who really fell in love with it, really like wanted to make it their own very, very badly, and they have maybe cash to pay for, because I'm not sure it's going to praise for what you're asking. And the easiest way to do that is put it in MLS. So I'm going to give you the name of an agent I know who, she's going to represent you. She can give you some good advice. She can put it on the market for you. And, I'm going to call you back in 30 days and see how things are going, if that's okay with you. So I said the number, but I said it like, oh, I know you're not going to take that. And sometimes they say, well, I mean, I guess I could consider taking that, which is what I'm hoping for. But that happens like one time out of 100, and maybe one time out of 1,000, come to think of it. And I have handed them off to somebody who really is representing them, who really is going to put it on the market for them, who probably is going to tell them right off, your house is not going to sell for what you're hoping it'll sell for. And then I am going to follow up. I am not going to expect them to follow up with me. Last question. Oh gosh, this person did not say who they, it's like an LLC name. It's Bailey Houses. So maybe the person's name is Bailey. I don't know. If a tenant has left a property and said she was going to leave on the first of the month and come back for the belongings she left behind and tow a broken car, she came, towed the car, picked up a few things and left. We called her several times, emailed her and texted her with no answer whatsoever. We put a 3-day notice and note we were going to go in to verify, left the property and fixed broken stuff. We've not heard from her at all. Question is, do I have to go through an eviction process, or am I allowed to put her stuff out without going to court? Oh, you are not going to like this answer, Bailey. If you haven't gotten the keys, and gotten the keys can mean like if you do go, you have the right to put a notice on the door and go in to see if it is in fact vacant. And if they left the keys on the cabinet for you, I mean, that's pretty obviously turning over of the keys. That house is not empty legally. It is not abandoned legally. You probably have to file an eviction if you can't get a response from this person. So my next move would probably be to send a piece of mail. brings up an interesting question about the deposit, too. If she's not gone, she still owes this month's rent, which means you don't owe the deposit back. Assuming that she keeps possession of it for an entire month. I would probably send a text, and I would say, listen, because you have not contacted us and because you have not left us a key, we are going to have to file eviction against you. And honestly, that's going to go on your permanent record. And also, the longer it takes you to turn over the keys, the more we are going to be asking the court for. Like if you hold over for 2 months, we're going to be asking for 2 months rent. So please let's meet and get the keys, and you sign something that says what's left in there is abandoned and we will get rid of it for you. That's going to turn out to be way cheaper if you can get the cooperation of this person than filing an eviction. It's awful that you have to do that when they have said, I'm leaving, and then they just kind of ghost you and you can't tell if they're in or out. Good question, Bailey, or whoever that was. And thanks for all the questions today on Question and Answer Week. Again, go check the calendar at CincinnatiRIA.com. Lots of stuff coming up over the next few days. QuickBooks class, Ohio wholesaling class on Sunday, and the beginning of the very exciting Money and Markets 101 playbook. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.